So we're going to start with Alvaro Vargas-Llosa, who, as you know, is a senior fellow and director of the Center on Global Prosperity at the Independent Institute. He's a native of Peru and has widely published and lectured. And then we'll hear from Mark Weisbrot, who will introduce.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for coming. Thank you to the Center for Economic and Policy Research for having me. So perhaps I could say a few words by way of introduction, then we can just have a dialogue. We'll turn this into a lecture or anything like that. Just some quick ideas to get us started. I would say that Latin America probably matters a lot more than the United States thinks, and perhaps not as much as we Latin Americans would like to think. We have had in the last few years almost a non-existent policy toward Latin America on the part of the United States. I tend to characterize it as neglect, perhaps even benign neglect, except for the drug war, which is always, of course, a very active dimension of U.S. foreign policy in general. But in terms of a Latin American policy, I think we can speak of pretty much neglect. Why that happened is a different question. Obviously, 9/11 had a lot to do with it, but other factors have contributed as well. It's a trend that's been going on for a few years. I think this is wrong. I think Latin America should be part of the U.S. world focus a lot more than it has been. We're bound by everything: history, geography, trade and investment flows. I mean, the trade between Latin America and the United States amounts to about $600 billion. The accumulated investments in Latin America by U.S. companies amount to about $400 billion in the last few years, $25 billion last year alone. U.S. sales to Latin America support at least 2.5, perhaps 3 million families here in the United States directly, and perhaps many more indirectly. 15% of the population here in the U.S. Is Hispanic, and immigration, including illegal immigration, continues to be an important part of this equation. So clearly, we matter. Now, I think that it would be wrong to say that what is happening in Latin America, which you can characterize in different ways, the reemergence of populism, the tilt to the left, you would probably talk of a more independent policy vis-a-vis the United States on the part of Latin American governments, whatever way we characterize it. I think it would be a mistake to think it's the fault or the responsibility of the United States. I have read in many different articles, and I've heard many important people speak of or ask the question, who lost Latin America? Nobody lost Latin America. What is happening in Latin America is essentially the result of homegrown tendencies and trends that have been, I guess, brewing for quite a while. I would say basically that there is a large chunk of the population that is not partaking yet in democratic life, in civil society, in the market economy in the way it would like to. It feels disenfranchised. Why that happens? Well, if you share my ideas, you will say that is basically the result of many decades of populism and economic nationalism, and very elitist state-related policies. Other people will say it's a different story. But whatever you think, whether you come at this from the left or from the right, it's the result, clearly, of as I say, domestic impediment to full participation on the part of large chunks of the population in globalization, in the market economy, in democratic life. I think that is what is dictating the emergence of these governments that are left or center-left or populist, whatever way you choose to characterize it. I think an irony in all of this is that the policies of the Bush administration have been a lot more cautious and prudent in Latin America, to the extent that one can speak of a policy. And as I said, I don't think really you can speak of a policy, but the sporadic and very spotty gestures on the part of the United States towards Latin America, which perhaps don't amount to a full policy, have been a lot more cautious and prudent than they have been elsewhere in the world. There's a disconnect almost between U.S. policy or U.S. Attitudes toward the region and U.S. policy, certainly in the Middle East and elsewhere. You've had an emphasis on trade, but only to some extent. The United States lost the battle at the summit of the Americas in Mar del Plata in 2005 against a number of countries that didn't want to go for free trade, the free trade area of the Americas, a continent-wide trade pact. The United States lost that battle, and then it pursued free trade agreements on a bilateral basis, but only to some extent. Countries like Uruguay wanted to pursue that avenue. The United States was very skeptical. Countries like Colombia, the United States pursued it for a while, and then the United States decided it didn't want to ratify, at least not for the moment, that pact. So you can't really say the United States has been obsessively pressuring Latin America into free trade agreements. If anything, it's been the other way around. Latin American countries wanting to have a permanent guarantee of access to this market, and the United States, a country that is now going through a more protectionist kind of mood, saying, hold it, we've got a domestic situation here that perhaps is not the right one for that kind of policy right now. The United States had a candidate for Secretary General of the OAS, the Organization of American States, Francisco Flores from El Salvador, and he was defeated by a socialist, by José Miguel Insulza, who is the current head of the OAS. You've had a number of situations in which clearly the United States was not in a position to dictate matters in Latin America, and the United States chose not to pursue those any further. I would say at least since Tom Shannon came to the top post in the State Department insofar as Latin American policy is concerned, you've seen an interesting attempt to pursue a relationship with the moderate left in Latin America, with Lula and with Vasquez and with Alan Garcia and Bachelet, in their, I guess, attempt to isolate the more radical, carnivorous left, as I call it, of the Chavez and Morales and so on. But it was an interesting policy, a right-wing government in the United States pursuing a relationship with the moderate left Latin America. Whether it was successful or not is a different question, but it was clearly this pursuit. And in terms of confronting the more radical left, it's been more rhetorical than anything. Certainly the tone has I think, come down significantly in recent times. I have not seen the U.S. administration confronting Morales in the way that it has confronted at some moments, Chavez, for instance. So clearly not wanting to play into the hands of the radicals there, etc., etc. So it's probably a combination of things. Probably has to do with the attitude of neglect. Latin America doesn't matter all that much, therefore why should we invest all that much energy in there? Also having to do with the fact that there is a reality there. Latin America is moving toward a situation in which the United States clearly understands that it's not in a position to influence the course of events in any very significant way. And also probably because you see a shift in the U.S. itself as the election draws nearer toward a less, I guess, confrontational kind of attitude. So all these elements have created a situation in which U.S. policy has been a lot more cautious and prudent in Latin America than it has been elsewhere. And I would make one exception, which is the drug war, which of course is something that is part of a long-standing U.S. position. Let me quickly go through what I think is going to happen in the near future. I think that if McCain wins the election, you will see a continuation of this inertia, and it will be more an inertia than anything else, than any sort of conscious design on the part of the U.S. administration. It'll be an inertia. It'll be a continuation of this sort of neglect or semi-neglect. I think they will pursue trade pacts occasionally and only insofar as they see domestic opinion in the U.S. moving toward acceptance of those trade pacts, and if that's not the case, then they will not pursue them. Because I think the Congress will be dominated by the Democrats, and I cannot see McCain investing a lot of capital trying to persuade a Democratic Congress to accept these trade pacts if he doesn't think it's easily doable. So you will probably see that kind of situation developing. He will probably try to continue with this policy of coming to an understanding with the moderate left governments of the region. I don't see that in any way moving toward an isolation of the radical left, which is, I think, what they would like to see happen. I think the U.S. would like to see people like Bachelet and Alan Garcia and Lula isolating Chavez and Morales. And these governments, with the exception perhaps of Alan Garcia, who is closer to Uribe in Colombia, have not wanted to do that. They are pursuing domestic policies that are clearly the polar opposites of what people like Chavez are pursuing in their own countries, but when it comes to foreign policy, they maintain a relationship which is, I think, closer than the United States would like to, and I think that will continue to be the case, even if McCain wins the elections. One thing that could change under McCain, of course, is immigration policy. That will very much depend on the configuration of Congress, the mood of the country, and how willing, again, McCain is to invest political capital in an issue that is very delicate internally. If he sees the Congress, which I think will be dominated by Democrats, moves in that direction, and that's something that is foreseeable, because Democrats, I think, are closer to the kind of immigration policy that Bush and McCain have been supporting so far, then you might see immigration reform. And I think that will be very beneficial for the climate in which relationship between the United States and Latin America takes place. Apart from that, I don't see any major development or change. I think it'll be, as I say, more of an inertia. If Obama wins the elections, I think you will see some change. I think you will see the United States clearly de-emphasizing the trade dimension of policy toward Latin America. In a way, that's been happening already because of domestic opinion in the United States, because of the Congress, which is now dominated by Democrats anyway. So clearly you have seen a shift, move away from this very enthusiastic pursuit of trade pacts with Latin America that was the dominant, I say, trend in the Bush administration until recently. So I would expect Obama and the Democrats to continue to de-emphasize trade pacts. I would see a move away from this attempt to draw the moderate left into a sort of anti-radical left camp. I see the Obama policy more much less discriminatory in its attempt to engage Latin America. Obama gave a speech in Latin America, on Latin America in Miami recently, where he clearly spelled out that was his intent. He wants to engage Cuba, he wants to engage Venezuela, he wants to engage other countries. So I would see a move away from this idea of splitting the left into two camps. Which is, of course, not an invention of the United States. It's already happening in a way in Latin America in terms of domestic policy, the domestic policy that each one of these governments is pursuing, although not in terms of the relationship among these countries, which is still rather close. I would see a Democratic administration moving toward immigration reform. So far as that reform will involve some kind of path to legalization for most immigrants here, clearly that will create a very positive climate for the relationship in the near future. Other pursuits that Obama spelled out, I think, are more idealistic than realistic, and probably will run into trouble. The partnership with Latin America for alternative fuels. That has already been, in a way, the policy of the United States, with less emphasis and with a less high-sounding rhetoric, but it's been the case. The ethanol partnership with Brazil, you might remember, Bush was in Brazil with Lula in his last trip to Latin America, and that was clearly the announcement that was made, a partnership with Brazil on ethanol. What's been the result of that? Another actively pro ethanol or alternative fuels policy. Well, the result has been that food prices are skyrocketing. It's been a major element. It's not the only one, but it's been a major element. So an Obama administration will have to weigh very carefully the benefits of a policy that might in the long run diminish dependency on oil, but in the short run will have devastating effects in terms of food prices. So I would say, essentially, to sum up, that the U.S. is much less influential in Latin America than it used to be, that the policy that has been in place for recent years has been one of essentially neglect, with the exception of the drug war, that in the near future, if McCain wins the elections, we will see a continuation of that trend, and if Obama wins, I think we will see shifts more in terms of atmospherics, of a climate in which the relationship takes place, than in terms of actual policy, because many of the things that he would do are already being done, because the U.S. administration is much less powerful domestically vis-a-vis a Congress that's already dominated by the Democrats.
Thanks.
Okay.
All right, we'll hear from Mark Weisblatt now, who, as you all know, is the economist who is co-director of the Center for Economic Policy Research, who's published a lot of work now recently on Latin America. So,
okay, thanks. I guess I'll use this PowerPoint a little. It has some
it's colorful
graphs and things like that. But, well, obviously we agree on quite a bit in terms of the United States losing influence. And I brought an article actually that I wrote two years ago where I said that this was actually a new era in U.S.-Latin American relations. And the trends have really continued and I think accelerated since then, in terms of the increasing independence of Latin America. And so I think these trends are going to continue for a variety of reasons. And I think the underlying, I guess one difference focus I would have is the underlying economics of it. The first thing is you've had a long-term economic failure in Latin America. And this has been, whether it's true or not, it's been associated with these reforms over the last three decades. And so I think that's a really big thing. We mentioned the other one. That, you know, just to take a look at that for a second, I always bring up this graph because I think this is the underlying basis of the elections that we've seen in Argentina, Brazil, Bolivia, Uruguay, Nicaragua, Ecuador, and now Paraguay. This is a, you know, from 1960 to 1980, you had normal growth for developing countries in Latin America. It wasn't huge. It was, you know, half of what you had in South Korea and Taiwan, but it was enough to really raise living standards, even with the inequality that you have and increasing inequality. And then from 1980 to 2000, you had almost nothing. This is just per capita growth here. Is growth in per capita income, or GDP, the most basic measure that economists have. Now, in the present decade, it's picked up some, but it's still very low, even if you count the last 3 years. They didn't, you're not going to get a good decade here, and we don't know what the future holds, especially with the U.S. going into recession, which will affect primarily Mexico and Central America and the Caribbean, but possibly more of the region, too. Not as much. So this is really, I think, an underlying trend. It's an unprecedented economic failure in some countries. You know, Evo Morales, for example, took power, with income per person lower than it was 28 years before he took office. And these are failures that are unprecedented in the history of well, they're rare in the history of capitalism. They're certainly unprecedented in Latin America. So what I see, I guess, is, besides what Alvaro talked about, which I agree with, the people being disenfranchised, the political aspect of it, and this democratization taking place, I also see in people getting a voice in the political system for the first time in a lot of these countries, I also see these new governments looking for new ways to make capitalism work after a long period of unprecedented failure. And so I think that's going to continue, and I think because the United States government doesn't really recognize that, they don't, you know, they've never really acknowledged that there was a failure because they don't really want to talk about the reforms that failed. And I'm not saying all the reforms were bad either. Some of them were necessary at different countries at different times. It's just the entire package, which is referred to in Latin America as neoliberalism, clearly ended up with a major failure in the vast majority, really almost every country. Only Chile has grown faster since 1980 than before. And so that, I think, is one of the big driving forces. These are just the policy changes, which everybody is familiar with, that have taken place. And again, you have the United States still really pushing these and saying that you just have to do more. And the governments in the region, the left of center governments, are all going in a different direction. Even Lula, for example, has not maintained some of the policies, that some of the macroeconomic policies of his predecessor, the certainly monetary policy, but they've eased up some on fiscal policy, and they certainly put an end to the privatizations, and they tripled the, or not tripled, but they vastly increased the minimum wage, and so there's changes there that definitely departed from previous policy, and I think you're going to see more in that direction there. And of course, some of the other governments had very drastic macroeconomic change, including Argentina, you know, which made the real stable and competitive real effective exchange rate the target for their central bank, which is something that neoliberal central banks don't do. Very important macro policy, much lower interest rates, and had a very defaulted on $100 billion worth of debt. Took on the IMF. That whole story was a very a huge break with the past. You have other governments now too, Bolivia, Ecuador, Argentina, Venezuela, for example. All of them, you know, instituting policies that were not really allowed or considered under the old regime, with different degrees of success. So that's one thing I would emphasize, just so you see the importance of what difference policy makes. This is just a graph of Brazil and South Korea. You can see until 1980, both of them were fast-growing countries, with Brazil considerably higher income than Korea. Korea continued after 1980 to grow rapidly, and Brazil did not. It has hardly grown at all, about 0.5% annually per capita. So that's the difference. South Korea now has a living standard similar to Western Europe, and Brazil is still a middle-income country with an enormous amount of poverty. That's the difference. This is what I think Latin America has foregone. This was the possibility that Latin America had, not the whole region, but various countries, and the whole region would have benefited if it had continued with some successful economic policies. Those are just the countries. And, you know, on the free trade agreements, I guess I would differ a little on, you know, you do have obviously resistance to these agreements. We don't call them free trade, by the way, at CIPR, because they're not. They raise some barriers and they lower others. And from an economic point of view, the barriers that they raise are often more economically important than the ones that are lowering, especially in Latin America, where these countries all have pretty much market access for almost everything they want to export. So the barriers that they raise, for example, around patents and pharmaceuticals, can be more important economically than the lowering of tariffs, which again, in many cases, comes out to be very little. So this is, I think that the United States government is still pushing the agreement. They're divided. Obviously, there's opposition in the Congress, but they can't really get anywhere. I mean, it was a lame duck Congress in Peru that passed the agreement. There's enormous resistance in Colombia. the free trade area of the Americas, which fought for 10 years, is dead. So the trend of the world is moving in another direction. The WTO is having enormous problems completing this negotiation that's been going on for more than a decade as well. And I think it's partly because of the recognition of failure. That is, not that trade is a failure. Trade is a very important engine of development. And so can foreign direct investment, which is a huge part of these agreements, can also be an important engine of growth and development. But it has to be used in a manner that, like China used it, which was done outside of the World Trade Organization for most of the last 30 years. And it has to be done in a way where governments can actually choose a development strategy. The abandonment of development strategies was really one of the major policy changes of the last 25, 30 years, and that's one that these governments are now reconsidering. This is just a little bit of people don't know, I think, in this country very much. The U.S. support for the coup in Venezuela and its subsequent efforts, tacit support for the oil strike, funding of opposition groups, all the things that the United States has done in Venezuela, that's part of the equation, too. This is part of the reason why we have such bad relations with Venezuela, and I think it affects the whole region because, as Alvaro pointed out, the United States has tried very hard to isolate Venezuela and say this is the troublemaker, this is the bad guy in the region, but in fact Lula and everyone else has pretty much consistently supported Venezuela because they see this dimension of the struggle, that is that Venezuela is not really, despite Chavez's rhetoric, is not really the aggressor here. They're the ones that have been infringed upon. And I think this was true most recently. And that's, I guess, why I would like to be optimistic, as Alvaro is, and there is a possibility. But I see more collision course, because if you look at recent events, the raid, for instance, the cross-border raid by Colombia into Ecuador. Now, there's another example where the United States clearly was the only country, practically the only country, that didn't condemn this, and probably had gave the go-ahead for it, most likely. At least that's what everyone in the region believes. And clearly, they're pursuing again this strategy of confrontation. They killed the chief negotiator for the humanitarian accords. Whatever you want to say about the dispute, clearly all of almost all of Latin America is lining up on the side of Venezuela and Ecuador. You saw that in the OAS and the Rio Summit. And here's the United States, trying to be quiet and diplomatic, as you pointed out, Shannon is a diplomat. But nonetheless, everybody knows where the differences lie, and they continue in the aftermath of this, with the whole Interpol report. And talk about hostility and aggression. I mean, the State Department acknowledges publicly that they're considering putting Venezuela on a list of state sponsors of terrorism. Now, you really can't get any worse than that if you're really trying to antagonize a country no matter how polite you are about in your language or what kind of diplomats you have, a nicer ambassador and things like that, if you're going to do things like that, you're going to get a very strong backlash. And so that's why I don't see the big changes. Now, you get to the future. What's going to happen? McCain is obviously more of the same. He's more aggressive than President Bush in many ways, certainly in his rhetoric. One thing you have to take into account is that you have to take everything a presidential candidate says with a ton of salt. And this is the reason for Florida, is an obvious reason for this. If you had in this country, I think, imagine that all the people who believed that Elvis Presley was still alive were concentrated in one state with enough electoral votes to swing the election. You would have candidates arguing about the king of rock and roll and causing accusing people of being unpatriotic for saying that he's dead, and so on. And this is a lot of what you're seeing in this. So when Obama says in his statement that he's defending the right of the countries to go across the border like Colombia did, and you know, it's just basically saying I'm taking a position opposed to the rest of the region. I don't know that he's going to say that after the election. If he does, then, you know, we're back to square one, and there was no election as far as Latin America is concerned. I don't really think he'll do that. I think that that was, you know, a speech to the Cuban-American, Cuban, what was it?
Cuban-American National Foundation.
Yes, the Cuban-American National Foundation. So, you know, we don't really know. I don't think the campaign rhetoric is really going to tell us very much about what U.S. policy is. But here are the economic trends, I think, that will push it in the direction that it's going. One is that, again, the United States is not really recognizing the failure, you know, the economic failure or the attempt of the countries to find new ways. And these are not particularly radical ways. Many of them are in place all over the world, including Latin America, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. Two is the United States economy is going to become less important to Latin America in the next few years, especially because we're heading into a serious recession and our trade deficit is going to shrink some. And so it's quite possible even that if you measure it in non-dollar currencies, that the, and you know, we've done a couple papers on this, that the exports to the United States will not even grow. So it won't present the market to Latin America that it's presented in the huge and growing market that it's presented in the past 10 or 15 years. And I think that's going to be important. And three, I think some of the changes that are taking place in Latin America are becoming institutionally permanent. Now, these are just beginning. Some of them, you know, the Banco del Sur, the UNASUR, the expansion of Mercosur, but all of it, there's a definite trend towards regional economic integration. And you see a real commitment in this regard with the new left of center governments. And I think, again, it's all of them. It's not just the more, what Alvaro called the carnivorous ones. I guess I'm part of the vegetarian left here, so I should be associated with that left. But I think it's pretty much across the board. And the fourth reason I would say is there's still very little recognition here, partly because so little attention is paid to Latin America, but partly because of not understanding the underlying economic basis of these changes, that you won't see a big policy. It's very hard to see a big policy change without some recognition of any of the mistakes in the past.
So, open to your questions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming.
Do you think maybe the lack of interest in Latin America is because there's no oil, only Venezuela? Would that play a part in all this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, there is oil, and I mean, obviously in Venezuela, and there is some interest there. I mean, as I said, the United States has done as much as it could do, I think, to undermine that government, and is still doing it with this stuff about state sponsors of terrorism. Things like that. So they're trying to delegitimize the government, and oil is a big part of it. We do have this historical problem with oil states. They either become client states or they run into serious trouble with our government. This is true in the Middle East, and I think it's true in this hemisphere as well. And but I think, you know, what Alvaro said was true too. There's a lot of distraction because of the Middle East. I think that's one of the reasons why our government hasn't done more. And I think in a way Latin America has been blessed by that. You know, Stephen Kinzer had a nice piece in The Guardian recently where he said that, look, you know, Paraguay just had an election 10 years ago. We would have been worried about a military coup. And now it's a remote, fairly unlikely possibility. This is because, you know, some of these changes are becoming structural, the loss of U.S. influence. And I guess there is one piece of the explanation that I left out, which is a huge part of it, I shouldn't have. And that's the IMF. You know, the major avenue of influence in Latin America was the International Monetary Fund. This is true for developing countries in general. And it's not because they loaned so much money, but because they had this creditors cartel arrangement where if you didn't accept conditions for the IMF, you didn't get money from the other multilaterals and the bilateral the countries, the bilateral agencies, USAID, the American Development Bank. And that whole thing has broken down almost completely. Lending to Latin America from the fund itself has dropped from like 20 billion to less than a billion in the last few years. And that whole thing has collapsed. And I think that's a major change in U.S. influence. And again, it's not just in Latin America. It's really in middle-income countries throughout the world.
Well, I would say that there is oil, and the United States probably takes for granted that that oil will continue to be supplied. If it wasn't the case, then it would probably be worried, and that worry would probably translate to attitudes and perhaps even policies. Despite the rhetoric, Chavez will continue to supply oil to the United States. He could not afford not to. His entire political design rests upon the revenue that comes from that, and the idea of substituting China for the United States as a partner in this is not serious. I mean, the cost of transport would just be staggering. There's no way he could afford to do that. He's a disciplined and punctual and almost obedient supplier of oil to the United States, and the United States knows that. So there isn't too much worry there. There's more worry as regards the supply that's coming from Mexico, which is absolutely crucial as well, because it's drying up. The reserves are drying up because of a lack of capital in Pemex, capital investment in Pemex, on the part of Pemex. The reserves are going down, especially the most important project they have down there, which is called the Cantarell project, which accounts for about two-thirds of the entire oil production of Mexico. And because it's drying up, there's a serious risk that in the next 2 or 3 years, output will be halved. So that will become, I think, an issue at some point, except that, of course, there is a very much a pro-U.S. government in place right now. So that's not something that would trigger immediately a hostile policy. I think, if anything, it would trigger a sort of friendly pressure to try and open up Pemex to and the oil industry to private investment. The Mexican government is trying to do that anyway, except it's an extremely sensitive issue in Mexico, and it's they're in the middle of a huge debate about that. So I think that's the reality. There's also or there was an effort to try and replace oil with natural gas at one point, but of course the developments in Bolivia complicated matters, because the idea was to have Bolivia supply oil to California and even to Mexico. Not oil, natural gas to California and to Mexico, but of course the internal politics there stood in the way. And the only alternative supplier might be Peru, where important discoveries were made in not so distant past. But a lot of that is being supplied elsewhere anyway. So I don't think natural gas will be a viable replacement at this point or in the foreseeable future.
Do you think it's feasible for Latin America, the continuation of trying to use land and cornfields to grow ethanol, especially now that we have this soaring food crisis? And my second question would be, how the economic slowdown here in the U.S. is affecting in general in Latin America? What's the impact it's having right now?
Do you want to go first? Sure. Well, we both agree on the ethanol question, and now there's increasing research coming out saying that it isn't actually a net positive. Even sugar cane may not be a net positive contribution in terms of climate change. So I think you will see some changes in policy there. I think some of the governments, you know, Europe and Japan, that have these ethanol requirements for their gasoline might reconsider those. and Alvaro already mentioned the food, the problem with the food. So, no, I don't, I mean, it can be done, you know, but I don't think it's good policy, and I think there will be some changes in the next few years. The second part was the...
In general, what is the impact of the economic slowdown?
Okay, yeah, we did a paper on that recently, and so I won't go through the whole thing, but basically, the impact is going to be strongest on those countries, Mexico, Central America, the Caribbean, the countries that have the so-called free trade agreements with the United States will be the hardest hit, simply because they have the exports. It's hard to predict exactly because a lot depends on currency changes, and but there's no doubt that it'll have a serious impact, especially on Mexico. Mexico went into recession in 2001 during our last recession, which was quite mild, and we're expecting this one to be much more serious. So I think it'll have a significant impact on those areas. Negative impact.
I would simply add that I think that the best move the United States could make on the ethanol front is to get rid of the tariff. Right now we have a very absurd situation. A government and a country almost, because this is almost a national aspiration now, clearly intent on making ethanol and other alternative fuels the centerpiece of their energy policy, using everything from subsidies to laws forcing the energy mix to be partly based on ethanol. And yet you had a 54% tariff against imports of ethanol from Brazil, which is the main producer, together with the United States. So I think that if you got rid of that tariff, you could clearly supply the market here, and you could lower prices, and you know, it wouldn't be enough. But clearly, having that tariff is not only offsetting many of the internal moves, but also, I think, standing in the way of moving forward. In terms of the impact of, I think it will, yeah, I mean, it'll be significant, mostly in Mexico and Central America, a lot more than in South America, I think. In South America, it will depend on whether the sort of drop in demand here for imports will or will not be offset by the drop in the value of the dollar. Obviously, if that trend continues, that will make imports more expensive, and so that might complicate matters even further. But if the trend changes and those imports become cheaper, then I think Latin America will continue to export. I was surprised to see that last year U.S. companies invested about $25 billion in Latin America. I would have expected that to drop somewhat with respect to previous years. But perhaps it just means that the crisis hasn't caught up with those foreign investors yet, with those American investors in Latin America yet. I would expect in the immediate future a drop there as well, in terms of the amount of investment that's going down south.